Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and here's a stat that you don't want to have to think about right now. Nationwide, 1 in 9 Americans uses food stamps to buy groceries. Here in New York City, that number is even more startling. 1.1 million people out of our population of roughly 8 million, that's 1 in 7 New Yorkers, receiving their food via food stamps. As hunger grows in the United States, so does the need to invent a solution that would prevent it, not just deal with it. And that solution might need to go well beyond food stamps and into reimagining the social contract. My guest now is journalist Sasha Abramsky. He's also a senior fellow at the liberal think tank Demos, and he's the author of a new book that details this crisis, Breadline USA, The Hidden Scandal of American Hunger and How to Fix It. Sasha Abramsky, welcome back to WNYC.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
We know there's hunger in America. Why do you call it a scandal?
Well, I call it a scandal because even in the middle of this recession, we are still the richest country on earth. We have tremendous resources at our disposal. And it seems to me that in failing over 20, 30, 40 years to deal with this growing crisis, this crescendo of hunger, of what the government terms food insecurity, we've exposed ourselves to something that genuinely is a scandal. Now, we usually think of scandal as something salacious involving maybe sexual infidelity. But it seems to me the real definition of scandal is something that's durable, something that shouldn't be happening and is happening, that we know better than to accept but are accepting nevertheless, and is now exposed. And I think in seeing the breadlines around the country and seeing families failing to be able to meet even the most basic needs of their everyday life, that to me is a scandal by any definition of the word.
So why do you think so many Americans are going hungry?
Well, I think this preceded the current economic crisis. My book was actually, the genesis of my book was a few years before the whole economy collapsed. And I was traveling around the country. And this was during the boom times. Unemployment was low, stock market was booming, housing market was going through the roof. But I'd go to these small communities, and literally half of the community in some of these small towns would be either on food stamps or at the local church at the food pantry, standing in line every weekend for their bag of outdated donated food. And I think what's happened is we had this idea, and it's sort of the Reagan-era notion of trickle-down prosperity, that you give a lot of money to people at the top, and somehow magically that money percolates through to the economy and everyone gets wealthy. So we deregulated, we cut taxes, we eroded our social compact, we eroded the role of government regulatory agencies. And we ended up with the exact reverse of trickle-down prosperity. We ended up with what I'm going to call trickle-up poverty. We in a sense, beggared the bottom part of the economy. We made their daily living arrangements absolutely impossible. We made it an impossible juggling act, and we asked them to perform that juggling act every day of their working lives. And I think, not surprisingly, one of the side products was hunger. People ended up having to choose between putting gas in their car to get to work or buying food for their kids, buying medicine for their families, or buying food for their families. And those kind of equations more and more are defining the lives, not just of the unemployed, but of the working poor, the people on minimum wage, the people just above minimum wage. So the farm workers, the people working in the meatpacking industry, the hotel workers, even Walmart, McDonald's workers, some of the biggest companies in America are paying these wages that don't pay the bills.
So are those the new hungry in America? Just as we talk about those without health insurance not being the poorest of the poor, because the poorest of the poor can qualify for Medicaid in most cases, yeah. The poorest of the poor can qualify for food stamps. Is it a couple of rungs above that, a kind of working hungry that we're now seeing as the hungry in America?
Absolutely. I think what's happening is, and you hear this from food pantry workers all the time, what's happening is the near poor, the people who are one paycheck away from a financial disaster, they're the ones who are being absolutely hammered at the moment because, as you said, they're deemed by the government too affluent for food stamps. The poverty line in this country for a single person is about $10,000 a year. So you don't have to be earning very much to take yourselves above the poverty line and out of range of many government programs. So if you're, let's say, earning $14,000 a year, in the best of times, you're struggling to make ends meet. But if anything goes wrong, let's say you're underinsured and so you have a $1,000 deductible on your health insurance and you suddenly have to use that, then all your discretionary income's gone. Or gas prices do what they did last summer. They went up $1, $1.50 a gallon. And again, if you're driving to work, that's $20 or $30 a week extra that you're finding out of your disposable income just for gas. And so I think you're right. It's the near poor who are having to make these incredibly unpalatable choices between buying enough food to survive and all the other necessities of life.
Listeners, are you among the working hungry? Call us up and tell us how you manage your food budget if it is stretched. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692, or post to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. For Sasha Abramski, author of Breadline USA, The Hidden Scandal of American Hunger and How to Fix It. You write about conducting your own experiments into food insecurity, in which you spend several weeks trying to feed yourself on an increasingly constrained food budget. In one chapter, you appointed yourself a figurative McDonald's employee, netting $1,200 a month to live on. In another, you were a food pantry client. What did you learn? Which of the experiments did you feel was the most livable?
Well, what I wanted to do, I'd interviewed hundreds of people at this point, so intellectually I knew what the story was, and they told me their circumstances, they told me their juggling act, but I realized I didn't know how to feel that. So I thought the only way I can feel the hunger is to really put myself into their shoes. So I, as you said, I put myself on the figurative income of a McDonald's median income worker. It was $8.23 an hour. And then I said, all right, in week one, if this is my income, realistically, I'm spending this much on rent, this much on car insurance, this much on paying health bills, etc. This is what I'm going to have left for food. And it was about $50, which is about the same as if I was on food stamps. And I said, all right, well, I'm going to do what most poor people do while they can. I'm going to use credit. So I use my credit card as a crutch. But what happens is people burn through their credit. And so after a while, let's say a year or two of $20 or $30 a week extra on the credit card, people have no more credit to access in that situation, so they go onto a cash only. So I did the same thing, but I condensed it. So the next week I say, all right, let me try and live within a cash only budget. And then the week after that I say, well, you know, let's assume the gas prices have spiked. And what I found was very, very quickly that putative McDonald's worker is far, far less able to feed him or herself than someone on food stamps. So I had talked to a Walmart worker in northern New York, and she'd said to me, well, look, when my hours were cut, I ended up with less than $200 a week after taxes, and I was spending less than $20 a week on food. That's less than a dollar a meal. And I thought, that's absolutely impossible. But as my circumstances tightened in my own experiment, that's exactly where I headed. And if you're down to $15, $20, $25 a week, A, you get no protein. You can't afford meat. You can't afford fresh fruit and vegetables. You're eating incredibly cheaply. You're skimping on your portions. You're doing everything you can to make those pennies stretch into the next meal. And I found it the most extraordinary experience. I found that it made me extremely lethargic, extremely depressed, and it made me socially invisible. That was one of the most surprising things. I had no money, and so I couldn't afford to go out. That's what many, many people told me, that was the hardest thing of being that poor, was becoming socially invisible.
And one of the distressing things in your book was the quality of the groceries that you got at food pantries. Some were either inedible, like rock-hard bread, or yogurt and chicken that were well past their sell-by dates, or some were weirdly unusable, like Mexican mole sauce, which they gave it to you by itself, which seemed to be useless solo, and there were no fresh fruits and vegetables.
Yeah, I mean, basically, this is one of the great problems with a charity-based food model. It's based on leftovers. It's based on donations. It's also based on a few things from the USDA, but basically it's donations from charitable individuals and restaurants and supermarkets. And what they tend to do is when they're cleaning out their pantry, they give their older stuff to the food pantries. Or when supermarkets have something past sell-by, they'll give it to the food pantry. It might still taste good, but on the other hand, it might be a week out of date and be almost inedible. You mentioned the mole. For me, the worst thing was the volunteers have to shop for you, and they don't know who you are. All they know is your name and your age. So they have to make an educated guess. And my name is Sasha Abramski, and the person guessed rightly that I was Jewish. So I went to the food pantry, and I came home with this bag of food, and I knew a lot of it would be inedible, and a lot of it I'd have to throw away. And I also knew a lot would be just utterly random. And I'm opening the bags, and I'm, you know, getting my chocolate Hershey, Twinkie, whatever they are, and my sickly sweet donuts and my stale bread. And then there's this huge jar of gefilte fish. I thought, this is wonderful. You know, someone had looked at my name, thought, this person will like gefilte fish, put it in. As it happens, I loathe gefilte fish. And I was so depressed. But this is the sort of thing you get in a charity. You get randomness and craziness.
There was a kind thought behind that somewhere.
There was a good
Dale
thought.
In Jersey City, you're on WNYC. Hello, Dale.
Good morning, Brian. I'm one of the working poor as well as I'm permanently disabled because I earn slightly over $14,000 a year on SSD. I get exactly $14 in food stamps from New Jersey, and I maxed out on my credit cards buying food. I clip coupons like for McDonald's and Burger King and other places. I eat poorly because of that, but I am also growing my own vegetables on my fire escape, which that helps me eat better, obviously, with homegrown tomatoes and peppers and cucumbers, and it's a struggle.
Dale, thank you for telling your story. People need to hear it. Lorraine and Joan calling together, I think, from Manhattan. You're on WNYC.
Well,
hello.
Lorraine will speak for the two of us. We are seniors, retired seniors on low income, and we're two professionals, but we had low income. And we now get food stamps, $14 a month, which is a supplement. It helps improve our nutrition.
That's the same figure Dale gave us, $14 a month.
That's the bare minimum, I believe, and an awful lot of people who are just below the cutoff point, that's what they get. So they qualify for food stamps, but it's really just almost, utterly inadequate at that point.
It's tokenism. Most of our income goes to the landlord because we get an increase every year gratuitously, whether he does anything or not. And this is what's impoverishing us. Because whatever we get in a rise in Social Security goes to the landlord. And that you have to take the whole picture into context. Where food is our nutrition is supplemented, we're eating better, and we also attend pantries. But that is diminishing. We see a vivid diminishment. The shelves are empty. We make do. And we feel that we represent a good part of the population in New York that is too ashamed to go to pantries and too ashamed to ask for food stamps.
Lorraine, what do you need? What would change this? Is it a different government infrastructure, which is what Sasha is calling for in his book?
What I think we need are honest politicians, which we don't have, as you can see what's happening in Albany, even in Washington. And the fact that Bloomberg is making himself a dictator in New York, and he concerns himself with tourists. The residents count for nothing. It's not infrastructure, it's people. The people who represent us are so inadequate. The bar has been lowered so on the presidency, I sometimes feel I could run for president.
Lorraine, I'm gonna leave it there. In some fairness to the New York state government, the basic monthly welfare benefit just went up, really mostly thanks to Governor Patterson, but for the first time in over a decade, so it was that stuck. The food stamp allotment also just went up. But on our website, Daniel in Manhattan is posting that, quote, I have a good friend who receives disability, and this amounts to exactly $86 over the $10,000 mark to qualify for food stamps, $86 over the limit to qualify for food stamps. So he wonders, is the government deliberately determining or defining an income for one program that prevents a needy person from accessing another program? And Sasha, we just have about a minute left, but I don't know if you think it's that conspiratorial, but what's the biggest change that you're calling for?
I don't think it's a deliberate conspiracy, but I do think that over the last many years, the government has underestimated the poverty line. So it has moved the poverty line to an unrealistically low level. And one of the side effects is an awful lot of people who, by any reasonable measure, are poor. They're struggling to pay their basic bills. They're at constant risk of eviction or foreclosure. They're routinely going hungry. Those people are deemed too affluent. So I think one of the things we need to do is we need to have a much more realistic measure of poverty, and that would expand access to government programs. But I don't think this is just about government handouts. I think for 30 years, we've let the minimum wage stagnate. Now, the Obama administration is committed to raising it, and I think that's a huge start, because one of the great problems is there's a tremendous pool of people at the bottom of the economy who are either paid minimum wage or they're in jobs like McDonald's or Walmart, which advertise as being just a couple dollars above minimum wage. And if the minimum wage stagnates, that entire pool of workers is paid an unrealistically low level. So I think we need to tackle this kind of thing, not just by throwing money into hunger programs, but by raising the minimum wage, protecting pensions, by expanding access to health insurance. These are big picture changes, but these are the things that in the long run are going to make the people we've talked to just now and the many, many people I've talked to throughout the country able to access more food and better food. And that's what I'm advocating in my book, Systemic Policy Change.
Sasha Abramsky from the liberal think tank Demos. His book is called Breadline USA, The Hidden Scandal of American Hunger and How to Fix It. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. If you were listening yesterday, you heard State Senate leader, or at least one of the people who thinks he should be the leader, David Sampson, talking about arts and mayoral control of the New York public schools. Later on in the day, Mayor Bloomberg reacted to him speaking on the show. We will play both clips in a minute and talk about what has happened to arts education in the Bloomberg administration. Stay with us.